From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, his name is Benjamin Krem, the official spokesperson for the Maitreya. Some say the Antichrist, others say no way. And also tonight, the prophecies of the Maitreya from the mouth of Benjamin Krem. Here's some quick stories of the day. Al-Qaeda deputy leader, Ayman al-Zawahiri. Now, he's not the one in Iraq. He's the one that you see in pictures with Osama bin Laden right after 9/11. He's the one with the heavy beard. Marked the four-week anniversary of the deadly blast in London's transit system by threatening more attacks on London and against us in the United States. Shown in a tape on Al Jazeera, it's the satellite channel, he warned that terrorists would strike again unless England and the United States withdraw troops from Iraq. As for you, he says, the Americans, what you have seen in New York and Washington, what losses that you see in Afghanistan and Iraq, despite the media blackout, is merely the losses of the initial clashes. In response, President Bush, speaking from his Crawford, Texas ranch, says the United States will not be swayed by such threats. A 19-year-old Israeli soldier opened fire inside a bus Thursday, killing four Israeli Arabs in the deadliest attack on Arabs in Israel by a Jewish extremist since 1990. An angry crowd then killed him. 13 people, including bus passengers and two policemen, were wounded in the shooting, which appeared linked to tensions over the upcoming Israeli pullout from the Gaza Strip and parts of the West Bank. The military identified the dead soldier as Private Eden Natan Zeda. His father, Yitzhak, told the Associated Press that his son ran away from his army unit several weeks ago after being told that he would have to participate in the Gaza pullout. Israeli radio said the gunman was bludgeoned to death by the crowd. After the attack, the gunman's body lay on the floor of the bus, and police covered his head with a black plastic bag. His shirtless upper torso was heavily bruised and bloodied. Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon denounced the shooting as a despicable act by a bloodthirsty terrorist. Settler leaders also condemned the attack. NASA has cleared Discovery to return to Earth next week, concluding that there was no need to send the shuttle astronauts out to another spacewalk to repair a torn thermal blanket near the cockpit window. Coast to Coast AM science advisor Richard C. Hoagland of TheEnterpriseMission.com. Does that surprise you that there will be no work on this thermal blanket, Richard?
Good evening, George. No, it really doesn't. I mean, I've looked closely at the photographs. They've been very good in providing us with really ultra close-ups. And I listened to Wayne Hale analysis of the afternoon after the MMT meeting. And it's basically there's nothing can be done. Unless you took a scissors out there and snipped off this thermal blanket, and then you have the problem that when you have winds going past it at thousands of miles per hour in the lower atmosphere after they come in through the reentry, what you might wind up is getting the wind under the adjacent blankets, pulling up those threads and puffing off a lot of other stuff, and it goes back, hits the tail, hits the control surfaces, and you're in a world of hurt. So their analysis based on wind tunnel testing they did all last night was that this thing is not going to come off. Just leave it alone. Remember what John Young said, there's nothing in space you can't make worse if you do the wrong thing.
So as far as we know, right now, all is set then for this early Monday morning arrival.
Well, this is what's going to happen. Tomorrow night during your show, they will undock from the International Space Station. And while you're entertaining guests from around the world and across the Internet, they will be flying around the space station, taking pictures, waving goodbye, and then going far, far away. So I don't know whether you want to do an update tomorrow night, but that's what's going to be going on then.
Okay, let's play that by ear.
Then on Sunday night, when we're on, they will literally be doing the reentry all during our show. They will be actually reentering the atmosphere, going supersonic, coming into the landing at the Cape just before we go off the air.
How long does that entire process take when they really start reentry?
It's about an hour and a half.
Okay. Okay. Well, while you're on the air with me on that special Sunday show with Tim Ventura, as we talk about new propulsion systems.
And our surprise guest. We've got another guest. Surprise. Yes.
We will have a live feed right into the studio here from NASA. So at any time and for moments of the program, we'll be going to NASA for some updates as well.
It should be an interesting time because, again, they're going to be doing a night landing, which they did on Columbia. And the reason for that is they launched late in the window. Remember, they launched 13 days after they wanted to, so the lighting shifted from day to night. So it's not ideal. Well, actually, Hale said that as a flight controller, there are some commanders that prefer landing at night because they light up the runway with all those huge Klieg lights, and you don't have daytime scattering from, you know, reflections off the ocean and clouds and all that. So you really see where your runway is. Because remember, this thing lands like a glider. You get one shot at landing from outer space.
Oh, but it's a computer landing anyway, isn't it?
Not really. Oh. Down to the last few thousand feet it is, and then Eileen will take over.
Okay.
And she will manually, you know, pun intended, land this thing herself.
All right. Very good. Richard, keep in touch, my friend.
Will do.
Richard C. Hoagland, EnterpriseMission.com. Now, hopes of finding hydrogen oceans on Saturn's smoggy moon Titan appear to be dashed, according to some scientists who write a report in Nature magazine. The moon's atmosphere is thick with methane and ethane, prompting speculation that lakes or oceans of these chemicals may sit on the surface. We saw some incredible pictures there. Well, the probe that landed on Titan sent back images suggesting these possible shorelines and rivers, but they say now an extensive search for telltale infrared reflections has now revealed no sign of lakes or seas on Titan. They simply say that what they thought was flat surfaces of the methane now have simply turned out to be solid and dry. Well, after threatening to explode for days, sunspot 792 is instead decaying into a much less active region. According to forecasters, the estimate now is only a 15% chance of an X-class flare during the next 24 hours. Talking about alerts, the red alert, first of its kind, from Stan Deo regarding earthquake, volcanic, or storm activity. He has put this on his website, standeo.com, and we're going to talk with Stan about this because, according to him, this is a big one. Back with Stan Deo in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Stan Deo has held top secret security clearance and worked undercover for the FBI. He was part of an exclusive black project headed by Dr. Edward Teller, specializing in the development of flying saucer technology. And Stan has lectured on many world events, which include the coming global economic collapse, developing solar-related crises in the Earth's climate, the UFO deception and its real intent, suppression of badly needed technologies, and high-voltage physics of cheaper energy. He's our guest now on Coast to Coast. Hey, Stan, welcome back.
Hey, good to talk to you, George. It's been about a year or so, hasn't it?
Sure has. Now, you have been studying seismic event indicators for about 9 years or so. This is a big one, isn't it, this red alert?
Yes, actually, it's been about 11 years now. That's how we got introduced to Art Bell back in 1995. I had found the correlation between the naval data that I was pulling down and earthquakes, being able to forecast them, a certain number of them anyway.
We got a lot of people concerned about this red alert now, Stan. Tell us a little bit about what it is and how you were able to get to this point.
All right. Well, first, I guess we better tell them, you know, how we get the data and how I analyze it. Every day, the U.S. Navy in Monterey, California, at the fleet FNMOC, anyway, it's their analysis center for the weather data, uses a Cray computer, and they analyze weather buoys all over the planet. And they get variations in the temperature of the sea surface. Now, on the surface of it, kind of pun intended, the information is pretty straightforward. But what I developed was a way to see how rapidly temperatures change very subtly on the surface of the ocean using their data. And it takes 2 or 3 days worth of data to actually get that kind of information. But anyway, when I was able to correlate or to match rapid temperature changes on one side of a fault line going up and on the opposite side of that fault line going down, I determined that there was an earthquake in the making. And usually about 70% of the time, that earthquake would release within about 6 hours to 5 days. The bigger events covered more area of the sea, and there were bigger temperature variations, and these took sometimes a week to 10 days. Now, the December 26 Sumatran quake,
yes.
That one that produced that huge tsunami, I was seeing a huge, huge buildup of temperature variations across a fault line on the edge, the eastern edge of the Australian plate, and I was seeing that for 2 weeks.
Two weeks way before that event, and you started posting that on your website.
I did, and I got onto the Steve Quilt show. Steve, I told him about it, and he said, look, we better say something about this. And I said, well, I guess so. I've never seen anything like this, and I hate to, you know, alarm people, but there's something big happening down on that plate. As it turns out, being fair about it, I thought that the break would occur between New Guinea and New Zealand. Instead, it occurred a little bit further west of that in Sumatra, and that fooled us. But it was because the plate was shifting up and down. I couldn't tell where it was going to break.
I understand. But you had the right time period.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. And the right plate, and darn near the right spot on the plate. But now then, what I'm seeing, you know, I do this every day. We put the forecast up there, and I have friends, some of them who live on yachts around the planet, and when there's something in their area, well, I warn them about it.
Right.
And they'll put their craft into deep water if they're in a shallow somewhere in case there's a little bit of a tsunami or something. What we're seeing now is something that I have never seen in all the 11 years I've been looking at this. And I'm, you know, I debated for 3 days. I talked to Holly and Steve and a few other people about it, whether to even say anything about it. But because the data showed something so massive, stretching across a 2,000-mile stretch in the North Pacific, right off the West Coast, leading into the worst fault zones that we have in the country, I figured, well, I better at least tell people I think something is up pretty serious, real serious.
Absolutely, Stan, because if this happens and you didn't say anything, knowing you, you'd be kicking yourself for the rest of your life.
Well, actually, George, you're right. That's what finally moved me to go ahead and go public with it, because I thought I would feel guilty, terribly guilty, if a lot of people got hurt and I didn't say anything. And that outweighed my fear of saying anything and having nothing happen right now. I know the pressures are building out there. Whether they're going to release into this massive earthquake right now or 2 to 3 weeks from now, I couldn't tell you.
But you do believe something big is going to happen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, at first I thought I was looking, these temperature changes on the sea surface can be caused by storms. And so you have to separate that kind of information from temperature changes that follow a fault line. And back on the 2nd of August, which you can see on our website if you go to standale.com and go to What's New and click on the August 2nd thing, for those of you that are on the Internet, you'll see that there was a very, very distinct black line separating blues and yellows in an arc stretching from, oh, darn near under Russia, way beyond the Aleutian Island tip, all the way over straight into just above San Francisco near Mendocino. And, you know, I looked at that and I thought, well, gee, that's probably a cloud. That's well-deformed. Cloud temperatures don't normally have such a nice line, you know, 2,000-mile arc. But, you know, then I put some arrows on it and I thought, right. But then when the third came around and it was there again and there was another ridge underneath this one I was just telling you about, and it was developing the same kind of signature, I thought, wow, we are in trouble. And those two ridges, for people that don't live in California, they're called the Mendocino Ridge and the Murray Ridge, or Fracture Zone. They're actually fracture zones. And what's happening is the seabed is, the top part of it, north part of it, is moving toward the United States, sort of on an angle down. And the bottom part of that fracture zone is moving toward Japan. And then you go down to the Murray fracture zone, the same thing happens. But that means that that whole plate in between those two zones is trying to twist and rip San Francisco out of the United States.
Oh, my God.
Now, it's a slow process. And believe me, I don't want people to panic, but I really, really do think people should make sure they have their emergency radio to see what's happening should communications go out and have a big quake. And I think this should be applying to people from Seattle, Washington, all the way down to Los Angeles.
Are we also talking about tsunami possibilities here, Stan?
We are. Okay. We are. However, yes, we are. The kind of forces that are building here are slipping sideways, like I was saying, top going one way, bottom of the fault going to the left the other way. So these kind of things can produce events that could theoretically produce tsunamis toward everybody in the whole Pacific Basin community in the Ring of Fire. However, what I'm more concerned about is this movement of these fault zones causing earthquakes in close to California, right in close to the coastline, or even in the Juan de Fuca Plate off of Oregon and Washington, because this 2,000-mile-long arc I'm telling you about ties right into the Gorda Ridge, right at the bottom of the Juan de Fuca Plate.
Now, do these earthquakes, will they come prior to the big one or afterwards?
I think the ridge movements, these fracture zone movements out at sea, will trigger the earthquakes that are large, but the movements out at sea will occur first, I think, and
okay.
Then trigger, you know, Richter 8s or better, and I'm saying plural because I think it'll cause several. If you look on your, if you can get a map on the Internet that says what the Mendocino fracture zone is, you'll see the line goes right down, touches the bottom. It joins the bottom of the Juan de Fuca Plate at the Southern Gorda Ridge Plate, and it becomes, the Mendocino Fracture Zone becomes the San Andreas Fault. It doesn't, you know, hit it sideways. It becomes the San Andreas Fault. So if that moves, then the San Andreas Fault can move. And if there are earthquakes offshore, you could have less than 20 minutes before the tsunamis hit. And they will come in waves over the next 8 hours.
20 minutes. That's all we're going to have.
Well, if it occurs in close, okay? And I think that's the kind that would produce tsunamis. And certainly up in the Juan de Fuca area in Washington and Oregon, people are aware of that. They, you know, they've been told they've got 20 to 30 minutes maximum if that plate up there buckles before tsunamis hit the Puget Sound and various other places along the coast up there.
What about Mount St. Helens, Stan? Would this jumpstart it?
I think so, because if you'll look at the USGS, the reports over the last week, they've been saying, well, first of all, on July the 26th, the resurgent dome that had formed and pushed up over the last few years collapsed. And USGS have got the animations. In fact, we've got it up, Holly's got it up on the website, under What's New. You go down to, under What's New, about August the 2nd, right underneath there, you can play the animation of the collapse of that dome. And they are saying, at USGS, we don't quite understand why this is happening. There have been a lot of little Richter 3 earthquakes underneath Mount St. Helens, and they've now started saying, well, look, there is a potential in the immediate future here for an eruption that could throw ash 10 miles around Mount St. Helens cone.
Now, what's the window, Stan, that we're talking? And even though we're not going to hold you to dates specifically, I would like to know, because you're past accuracy, I think a lot of people are interested in the window that we might be talking about.
Okay.
So can you just give us a range?
I'm going to try, because we've never, ever had such a huge, pronounced signal on this kind of a plate. It's the biggest thing I've ever seen. So I know that the Sumatran thing, we had at least 2 weeks warning. I've seen some down in Sumatra recently that were, Richter 7s or whatever, and we had 5 or 6 days warning.
Okay.
So based on that, hopefully what we're looking at here, if it is going to convert into action, we are going to see something from right now to about maximum 8 weeks. And I don't think it would go quite that long, maybe 4 or 5 weeks. But we're watching it every day, and I'm doing my best to try to tell people if I think it's getting serious. And certainly yesterday when we looked at the map, there was a huge sudden warming spot off the coast from San Francisco down to the bottom of the San Joaquin area.
Does this warming get even more and more elaborate as you get close to that possible date?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And they get, in this case, I think they'll get very pronounced and you will see a line, those little dotted arcs I've got on my maps that show, I think it's on the 3rd, I've done that on the 3rd of August, and I've got some little arrows today, show you where the fault lines are, those two ridges I'm telling you about are on the bottom of the floor, and then the temperatures are over the top, so you can kind of see where these things are headed. But I think we're going to see a very pronounced signal as we get close to the moment.
Stan, can we keep you for phone calls for the next half hour?
Sure.
Okay, great. Stan Deo, our guest, his website, StanDeo, DEYO.com. I'm George Norrie. Back in a moment, we'll open up the phone lines. I know a lot of you are very concerned about this, so we'll give you an opportunity to chat with Stan as well. We'll be right back. Hey, pick up an After Dark subscription for a year, and you'll get a CD, a free CD, an interview that Art did a long time ago with Malachi Martin. It is called Perfect Possession. A couple ways to order and get all those goodies. Call 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505. Or go online. Right there at the homepage, you'll see it, the graphic, Perfect Possession. CoastToCoastAM.com. And Stan Deo is our guest right here on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie. Stan, this is a monster. I hope it doesn't happen.
George, while you were on break, I was reading a PDF file sent to me by my friend Rick down on a yacht down off the coast of Sumatra.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a paper that was delivered in 2003 by the Department of Civil Engineering at the Indian Institute of Technology in Kanpur, India, to the European Geosciences Union. And in this paper, strange enough, the two guys that wrote it, one was named S, abbreviated S Day, D-E-Y, is almost like my name, and R.P. Singh, S-I-N-G-H, called the Surface Latent Heat Flux as an Earthquake Precursor. And they were basing their paper on work that occurred in 2000 and possibly some rumors about what I was doing. And they said they were using satellite infrared photography over places like China and Kobe, Japan in 1998 and 1995 and 2002, and they were able to see the earthquake coming by heat building up, just like I'm doing.
Just like you're doing.
So the method, I'm not using the same satellite data they are, but the method is the same. And the whole school of people thinking this way is growing.
Okay, and just to review, you are seeing these hot spots in the North Pacific. Pressure building along a 2,000-mile-long arc. You've never seen anything this big before.
No.
And if it hits the United States, we're talking about, again, what region?
It's going to hit probably north of San Francisco in around Mendocino, and the shock from it will probably trigger the San Andreas Fault all the way down the California coastline and possibly release pressure building up in the Juan de Fuca Plate north of Mendocino and off the Oregon and Martian coast and trigger volcanoes like Mount St. Helens, maybe Rainier, and a couple of others over a period of, you know, several days or weeks. But I think we'll see rolling earthquakes once this thing releases. It's well known that the Mendocino Fault sits right at the focus, the meeting of three major faults, and should it get a big shake from whatever reason, that it will be the master, the key release for the whole San Andreas Fault for a really big one, the one that everybody's been talking about.
Well, I keep thinking of the movie with George Clooney called The Perfect Storm, where they, from Massachusetts to Boston, the fishermen all perished in that situation. Is this what one would call the perfect earthquake?
Well, it's sad to call it perfect, but yes, I see what you're saying.
Yep.
And I suppose in my research, it would be. It would be the super disaster. It's not something you can't survive, but it's certainly going to interrupt service for a while if it hit.
If it goes past 8 weeks and it hasn't happened, what does that mean?
It means we breathe easy for a while. I've noticed something in the last 4 or 5 days I've been seeing this, is that it has about a 36-hour period where it it waxes and wanes in strength, and it's like something kind of...
Gets hotter, cooler, you mean?
Yeah, okay. throbbing kind of thing. And I don't know what is starting it, what's keying it. I do know that the Aleutian chain, which has a ridge running parallel to these, sort of parallel to these, has been very busy over the last few weeks with smaller quakes all along it. There's a large number of them. So all I can say is, with my technique, I can give you about a week's warning normally, and in this case, if it's a big one, several weeks' warning, we think.
We have a geologist, an earthquake predictor by the name of Jim Berkland, Stan, and he has been talking about earthquakes along the western coast as well. Not as big as what you're seeing and feeling right now, but it is somewhat ironic that we have then two people who are experts at what they do talking about some similar things.
Well,
not
Frank
not
Condon,
a good sign.
Frank Condon, you know Frank, don't you?
Sure.
He emailed me and showed me some magnetometer readings, and boy, the stuff I saw there, if I interpret what he said correctly, we're looking at that certainly bigger than seven.
Let's go to some phone calls. You ready?
Yep.
West of the Rockies, welcome to Coast around the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, this is Mary in Portland, Oregon.
Hi, Mary. Go ahead, Dave.
Hi. So I'm in one of the areas that Stan is talking about. Hi, Stan.
Hi, Mary.
How far inland? You talked about the Oregon coast.
Yeah.
And I'm worried about that because I have a sister that lives in Astoria. And also, but I had heard that one of the safer places to be is on... a mountain or a rocky area or solid rock type?
I think so. Okay. If you can get, in fact, wherever you are, if you're near the coast and you think there might be a danger of a tsunami from an offshore quake, just in your mind, know where the high ground is close to you and how to get there if the roads are jammed, if people's cars crashed or something.
Certainly. I my sister knows about that because she lives in Astoria. But is there going to be inland near you know, Portland? There's a fault line.
It's hard to tell because it depends on the angle at which the tsunami would hit the coastline, how it would focus the force of it and run up channels and various things like that. Again, I say wherever you are, whatever altitude there, if in your local area, if you get up, you know, a few hundred feet, I think you could weather that, but don't be fooled by a tidal wave that comes in and then goes out, and you think, it's over. These things usually ricochet back and forth for up to 8 hours, getting less and less strength in them.
Well, I'll tell my sister that.
And the other thing, too, and this is very important, whether you're at your work or in your car at home, you should have emergency water supplies for at least 3 days. And if you're at home or an office where you can store it, 7 or 8 days worth of water right close to you.
Yeah.
And possibly a radio so you can hear what's happening. Mm-hmm. And we tell family groups to carry something in their wallet or their purse that has telephone numbers of relatives out of state or friends out of state that they can call when communications are working again and say, look, I'm okay, I'm at such and such a place, so that you can coordinate the famine, get it back together again, should there be a disruption of services.
Yeah, I'm just worried because where I'm living, it used to be all swampland. Not good. Anyway, I thank you very much for your time.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Mary.
Stan, I've got to do a broadcast, a coast-to-coast program in Detroit the end of August. Then it was convenient for me just to go to the cave in St. Louis and do a few weeks of shows and see my family. People in L.A. are going to think that I'm hightailing it out of here. I am not.
George, it's kind of funny. One time, Holly and I were, we had to leave town for a couple of days because my mom had died, and we were off the internet. We just, you know, it was a family crisis, and we drove to Texas and didn't think anything about it. Well, 4 or 5 days passed. We got back, and there was urgent messages on our faxes, on our phone messages, on the internet. Where have the Deos gone? They've left. Do they know something? They're not telling us.
Well, you know, the same thing's going. We hear all these horror stories about the possibility of nukes, and the president has left Washington, D.C. He's going to spend a month at his ranch in Texas. And you cannot believe the amount of emails I'm getting from people, Stan, who think that he has escaped Washington, D.C. because he knows something and doesn't want to tell us. It is truly strange when things like that happen.
Well, I think that we are eventually going to get nuked somewhere. I don't know whether it's going to be in the next few days or not, but my money from the data we've collected would be New York City would be high on the list because it's an economic center for the whole country, in fact, for the world.
See, and I have said that if it happens, I believe it'll be a smaller city, perhaps in the Midwest. I've got my own reasons for that. We'll talk about that on another show.
Okay. All right.
Very good. First time caller line. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah.
This
hi.
Chester Harris in Salt Lake City.
Hello,
Utah.
Chester. Go ahead, sir.
Hi. My question is to your guest, Stan.
Hi, Chester.
Hi. I understand it could be pretty big. Could this also cause a possible chain reaction to the Wasatch Fault front here in Salt Lake?
I'm just trying to see on the map. It is possible over the long term. I don't think immediately. You got to understand, Chester, I don't think that all this is going to happen in 60 seconds.
Right, but I mean, it could like shake something loose and cause something to
weaken. Well, you'll have time to, I think, say, oh, look, things are getting worse. There are more quakes. There's volcanoes active. We're getting little tremblers here in Utah. You know, maybe we better make preparations to weather something like that.
You'll have indicators.
Yeah, I think so. And it's something you can deal with if you just prepare ahead of time. In fact, look, Holly's got a button on our website that says preparedness. And if you go there, there's just hours and hours of stuff you can print out for free telling you what to do. You know, all the preparations you need to do, and it's all free. You know, we've had it up there for yonks, and she adds stuff to it whenever we find new things. But a lot of emergency services places use this, and we do suggest that that's a good insurance policy for you. Just know what to do in advance, how to clean your water, you know, where to get fresh water or how to store it in a bathtub when you need to for, you know, a few days' worth. But anyway, Chester, I think you'll have enough warning, so I wouldn't worry unduly until things start to happen.
Are you getting other seismologists reacting to what you believe could happen, Stan? Is anybody saying anything to you?
Well, other than...
beyond the names you've mentioned?
No, not that. I'm certainly getting a lot of email. From yesterday and today, we've had 45,000 visitors to our site, and we're getting email from them about... And a lot of them are saying, look... I've had dream visions of this, this, and that, which is exactly where you're saying, and it is coming soon. And some guy's saying the birds aren't behaving for 3 days, have been quiet and huddling. And, you know, animal behavior is certainly a good precursive indicator.
Well, so, I got to tell you, we've been in talking on this program for the last month or so about how people specifically are acting very strangely lately. It's almost like they're out of sync with who they may be.
Well, magnetic field variations could do that.
Yeah.
And that's a worry. Yeah. Look, as I say, our whole purpose in maintaining this website and telling you these things every day is to try to help you prepare. And you probably will sound like an idiot to your family or to your friends because most of them don't, you know, follow all this. But if we get just a few people in every little community doing this, then they can help those around them to weather the storm and think clearly again after the event happened. You know, just simple things. I mean, if the volcanoes go off, some people are going to probably try to drive through the mountains to the other side or various places through mountain passes. Well, understand there's going to be wet ash, which makes the road slippery. So carry a bit of extra rope and
hooks
and stuff to pull yourself up if you go over the side of a road embankment.
Good point. Let's go to our wild card line. You're up on Coast to Coast. Where are you?
Yes, I'm out of Mojave.
Okay, hi. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a question for the gentleman. I need to know, I live in California here, and what I'd like to know is, when this does happen, are the plates going to rise, or will California go down, or how does that work?
Well, from what I'm seeing here, we're probably in the beginning stages more likely to see slippage, parallel to the surface there, you know, left and right rather than up and down. I am concerned about the northern portion of the San Joaquin Valley up near San Francisco. If there is enough pressure in the fault movement to break the natural bunch of rocks and stuff about 16 feet of height, which blocks the Pacific Ocean from flowing down in the San Joaquin Valley, that could rupture that and let the sea pressure just start flowing into the San Joaquin Valley. It would probably take several days or weeks for it to fill up, but it could flood the entire valley, which would then leave islands separated from the mountains to the east. So I think that would happen before you see, like, things dropping off into the ocean. But in time, that may happen.
Okay, because I'm on the Central Coast. I'm right in the middle of California.
Of what, near what city?
San Luis Obispo.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've got friends out in that area. Well, high ground. In fact, one of my friends and his neighbors, they've got one of the guys has a huge boat, and it'll take all the families in those three houses. They're out there in the edge somewhere. And they've got that all packed out so that if they have an emergency, they're all going to sit in the boat and wait for it to happen, crack a few tin.
There you go. Box of crackers with them, huh? Okay, I also have a comment for George.
Yeah, go ahead.
George, mm-hmm. I'm quite a bit like you. I'm very intuitive to things that are happening around me. And I have never, ever had earth dreams like you say. I had three of them back to back. And the first one, it was like this black shadow was standing off to the left of me, and we were inside of the center of the earth. And the earth was all hollow, and all this molten lava was coming down like a river in there. And I sort of got the idea that, how they cool marbles, those clear marbles?
Sure.
And you get all those cracks. It's almost like the earth is going to break or something. Then the other one was like your tornado dream.
Yes.
Three of them.
My triple dream. Yep.
Yes. This is what I had. It was like three of them, but I don't know if the three would be combined into one big one. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They're very, very unusual. Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Stan, the December 26th monster earthquake out there in Indonesia, does that have anything to do with what might be coming in this region?
It well could. There's a growing school of thought that the tectonic plate theory is not correct. There are edges to these zones that they call plates, but like your caller just said, the new theory is that the Earth is actually expanding and is getting larger in diameter and has been for millions of years, depending on your viewpoint, but that it's convecting, and we think. In that paradigm, that the Richter 9 over in Sumatra or Nias is evidence, not so much causal of what's happening up in the North Pacific now, but it's evidence of this expansion occurring. And if you look at the Earth's surface, it's kind of semi-plastic and swelling from the inside like a balloon, but it's got a thick layer of molten stuff on the surface of it, that will turn around, that will spin, that will stretch in various directions depending upon how cool parts of the surface of the Earth are.
You think these things, Stan, are cyclical? I mean, this planet does this on a periodic basis, regardless of what the time periods might be?
Yeah, I do think so. There's a great deal of study been done. H.G. Owen in London, Dr. Owen published on this years ago. And there is a cyclic period to it, but it does seem that the Earth almost, like, breathes. It expands and contracts back, and then it expands. But generally speaking, we're 20% bigger in diameter than we were way back at the beginning, where the dinosaurs were.
All right, well, I'm almost out of time. Stan, your website, standeo.com. We have got to stay in touch with each other as we get close to this eight-week period. Are we going to see, are there little signs that we're going to see along the way?
I think so. And look, George, I'll email you if something really, impressive happens.
Okay,
otherwise,
please.
Just look at our site every day, and I'll update it as faithfully as I can at 4 o'clock every afternoon, Mountain Standard.
Okay, we'll keep monitoring that. Thank you, Stan.
Thank you, George.
Appreciate it. That's Stan Dale. Again, he says this is a red alert, is what he says on his website. It's the first of its kind that I've ever made in the 9 years of studying seismic event indicators. It is so huge that I almost can't believe my eyes. And you've just heard the rest of that. Now, if you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. Just send it away, and we'll just monitor this. You might remember Stuart Wild, one of our guests several months ago. Around November 6th, he believed, more than several months ago, that there was going to be a major earthquake affecting the Seattle region. That did not happen then. Maybe Stuart was just off in his date. When I come back, we're going to talk with Benjamin Krem, so get ready for this one right here on Coast to Coast AM.